things are going great. Hi, everybody.
How's it going? Things are going great.
Yeah, but this show is about things not going great.
The things aren't going as well for our phrases this week.
And if it sounds familiar to you, don't tune out now.
No, this is not a rerun.
It isn't.
We're doing another. Things aren't going well.
Because there's a lot of words like that.
Sure.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, apparently.
Lots of phrases, lots of things.
There's probably enough for more and more shows.
Indeed.
But these are the they.
These are the next. These are our next ones.
The evolution number two.
Do you want me to kick us off?
Yeah, things are not going great. What is your word?
My first phrase word is Mayday.
It's a phrase word.
Phrase. It's a phrase. It's a word.
Mayday.
It's a word. Mayday.
Yeah.
It's an alert.
If you're hearing Mayday, things are bad.
It is an international radio telephone distress call.
Yeah. It's bad.
Things are not going well.
I mean, really bad.
Really
if you're
bad.
Saying that. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
So go ahead.
English aviators who used radio telephone transmitting sets on their planes instead of telegraph sets have been puzzling over the problem of choosing a distress call for transmission by voice. This is the Wireless Age, June 1923.
So in 1923, June,
yes,
we still don't have something to say. Help wasn't good enough.
By June, we do. Oh, but in... until then, we did not. We...
oh. What
the words I
June?
Said, the just, words I said yeah. in there, radio telephone transmitting sets instead of telegraph sets.
Well, yeah.
Right.
With something with your actual voice.
Voice versus
the
Morse. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the important transition here, whereas something else might not have worked as well over the radio.
Gotcha.
Let me just run you down. When you call Mayday, what you would say and the things you would give up as information. It's a lot in an emergency situation. I got to be honest, folks. Like,
it's a hell of a checklist.
It's a lot. And I don't know if you have to hit them all, if you can just start blurting stuff out, obviously. But
I mean,
like,
you get out what you can.
Yeah. So a typical distress call starts with the word Mayday said three times in a row. So you can't mistake it. So it's clear. This is a distress call.
Got it.
Then the pilot would read aloud the name of his station, aircraft, ship, call sign, and type, the nature of the emergency, the weather. This is an order of things you have to list off to. The pilot's intentions or requests, the present position and heading, and if lost, then the last known position and heading, and when you last knew that. altitude, flight level, like fuel remaining in minutes, the number of people on board, and then after that, basically whatever else information any rescuers might need if they had to find you. Yeah. And the distress call, it says, has absolute priority over any and all transmissions.
Well, you hope for that, at least.
Again, it makes you feel better.
Yeah.
About calling it just not off into the void. Someone's hopefully listening.
Yeah.
It originated in 1923 as a result of air traffic between London and France over the Channel. No, over the Channel. The Channel is the thing that goes under it.
Yeah.
Yes. over the Channel. Frederick Stanley Mockford was the first to use this signal to indicate emergency situations. He was asked by folks to think of a word that would indicate distress or would easily be understood by pilots and the ground staff. And since there was so much travel between England and France, he picked a French word, which sounds like Mayday, M'AIDER. It's like more like midday, but sounds like Mayday, which means help me in French.
Oh, good.
From the shorter Venez Mayday, which means come and help me.
Really, really help me.
Yes. But like I alluded to earlier, SOS, which was the Morse code, you know, telegraph signal for we need help, please help us.
Yes.
Over the airwaves, as we know, S's are hard to distinguish sometimes.
Sure are.
I think there could be other letters. So it wasn't clear for these pilots to be saying SOS.
SOS, SOS, SOS.
Yeah.
That's a mess.
Yeah. So this gentleman Frederick Stanley Mockford decided to use a French word. And then in 1927, the United States formally adopted it as our official radio telegraph distress signal.
But how do the French feel about this? Because we bastardized it, right?
Not, I mean, we bastardized the spelling, yes.
And the pronunciation.
Not really. It's pronounced pretty close to that. I mean, I heard it. It's Mede, but it sounds like
Mede. But we gave both the same A's, the long A.
Right, yeah. I don't know. I didn't look that up. You'd assume they'd be happy to be a part.
You know, the French don't like you messing with the language.
History.
So what's this have to do with the month of June?
It doesn't. I just said, I said June, but I meant originally,
because
the article is from 1923 and this all happened in 1923.
Okay.
So it was before June that this happened, but that same year is what I meant. Yeah.
I thought,
sorry.
Yeah, you know, because of the May.
There was no payoff there.
No.
Oh, wow. I could have paid something off, like in a joke.
Well, it's a little late for that.
Now.
But, okay, so you brought up that it's a French word, because what was lingering in my mind, initially, I just thought, okay, this is M-A-Y-D-A-Y. This is a day in May.
That's how
this
we spell
it. English.
Right.
And I was going to say, what do all pilots of all languages around the world say these English words? But we're technically saying a French word, you're telling me.
Yeah.
We're bastardized French.
We're borrowing a French sounding term that means help me. French word. Yeah. Yeah, we made it sound kind of like what we would make it sound like if we read it.
But then everybody now has to say it that way.
Well, isn't that how we do?
You can have a pilot in Indonesia.
I think
he's got to say "Mayday, Mayday, Mayday."
I think our American empire has shown what we will do. You will say what we tell you to say.
Yeah.
It became out of there.
More because we struggle to say it any other way. Like, right. I only know one language.
Sure, but that's our struggle.
Yeah,
right.
I said struggle.
Personal
struggle. Put it right in there.
No, it's our personal struggle.
Oh, man, the struggle is real.
Things are not going well.
Murder, murder,
yeah.
Murder.
Where's your last known heading? But, 1927.
My last known heading? I got a whole list for you.
it was a lot, and I'm thinking to myself, like, all right, this is a lot of information.
Well, you get in what you can on the way down.
If
you get it all in, all the better.
It sounds like it sort of needs to fall in this order. You don't need to fill it all in, but they're expecting it in this kind of order.
Yeah. Where you are.
Yeah. What's your weather? No, I mean, it all makes sense. Like, yes, you would need all that information. And if you were going,
if you could actually get down to how many people are on board.
Right.
For some reason, they call them souls. Then, yeah.
Yeah, that's what SOS stands for. Save our souls.
Our ship.
I saw souls. I will leave that.
I have no idea.
I looked at the one and I'm like, huh, I thought it was ship. I'm like, look, it says souls. And then I moved on.
All right.
So I will not throw my weight behind that one.
I got nothing.
So what's your thing that's
not going well? That was like Mr. McFeely.
What does that mean?
It was speedy delivery.
What?
Yeah.
You wait till the next one that I have. That one, I thought that was rich and full. I get the whole Mayday call. It was nice.
I'm not saying it wasn't enjoyable.
I was.
It just felt concise.
I
didn't even get comfortable over here.
I'm sorry.
Yet.
I thought, too, it was a Mayday, like a springtime thing at first for
Mayday.
Some reason. But then, you know. Like,
yeah,
like, hey, I don't know anything. Look at this. We're all learning together.
Yeah. So I have,
yes.
Check it out.
All right.
Triage.
I learned that word from MASH, the television show.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah.
Because
mm-hmm.
it's a you know, medical emergency situation of prioritization.
There it is.
Yeah.
Right, I never knew what it meant. They just did it all the time.
Well,
I learned.
Yeah, because the first thing you notice is people are hurt.
Mm-hmm.
They go into a situation or a tent or an area called triage.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, then you start to figure out, oh, okay, I sort of get this.
Mm-hmm.
The people in the most need get plucked out of there and sent to surgery first.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So let me break it down for you a little more.
Break it down.
Yeah. So let me define it the way that it is technically, well, defined. the sorting of and allocation of treatments to patients and especially battle and disaster victims according to a system of priorities designed to maximize the number of survivors.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, you got to like that, right?
Yeah. So it's specifically a medical term.
Well, no.
Okay, cool.
I mean, not necessarily.
All right.
Yeah, because, you know, people like to convolute things. And I'm sorry if I keep getting words and phrases like these where I have to be the moderator and say, guys.
Take what you got over here and put it with this guy's over here, and you got it. Is that what you?
Yeah, but I'm not doing it again. This one's pretty defined, but what I am doing is there are several loud voices that continue to come up in the research that battle for things that don't seem to be right chronologically and everything. It's like, dude, like, pick a different fight.
Yeah.
But there are big fights in there.
Huh.
And I'll tell you.
All right.
So a couple of them are this. Japan comes up a lot. Sorting coffee beans in Japan came up more than I even would like to tell you.
Huh.
But here I am telling you.
Okay.
See, now, a confusing aspect of it, too, is that in Britain, in the 1700s, it was also used for basically how we think of triage in a way, but triage of lumber.
Okay, like assessing and pulling pieces out and stuff like that?
Right, mm-hmm. but when you look at the Japanese using it for coffee beans, which I'm sorry, I never really think of the Japanese as coffee people. We just covered a bunch of coffee.
Yeah.
Japanese didn't come up.
right? No.
We had Southeast Asia. Yeah. We had the islands.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but when you look at that, it's still a sorting.
Right, they're not assessing.
Right, it's like the, you know, in Splash, the Teamsters on the tomato line or potato, whatever they do, they wing out
pulling,
the...
Yeah.
Yeah, Splash comes up a lot. So those aspects of it, the Japan and some of the Britain, well, they muddle the waters.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yes, but they're... just side stories.
I say they are, yeah. Mm-hmm. So before I follow this all the way through, let me break down to you what some of the systems are. And there are a couple of, you know, regimented, just like your list there, with the Mayday call.
Yeah.
You know, with triage, there are systems because usually when disasters and emergencies like these happen, large accidents, train crash or something where all of a sudden... people who for years, nurses were just sitting around treating poison ivy and broken wrists, all of a sudden now have ambulances full of really hurt people coming in, you know?
Yeah.
And so they learn a system and study the system and train on it.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
So in most of those systems, the average breakdown goes like this. You kind of have your immediate need now. This person's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Very soon. And then you have your need soon. Hey, they are bad, but they could lay out here for an hour or two with some fluids while we work on need now people.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's your broken leg guy. He's need at some point. Sit. You know, he doesn't have a rebar through his colon.
Yeah.
He's just kind of got a broken leg. We'll fix you up, buddy. Don't hang in there. So those are the three kind of aspects of that.
Okay.
Now, researching this through and coming around, sneaking back around the back door and coming and cleaning up any leftover crumbs that I found there, you tend to see, well, oh, this is going to come full circle for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, French and British soldiers were in Japan in World War I.
Yes.
And that... to me, and dealing with these sorts of medical emergency situations, that says a lot to me about those other misconceptions about the origin of the word, because in reality, this really came into strong use in a militaristic way, a battlefield wounded technique with Napoleon.
Okay.
And you see that happen because this is really a derivative of a French word, or it is a French word with a history in the French language. So Napoleon had a couple of medical officers and surgeons on his team. You know, so while he's out whacking people, and his, you know, his cavalry is out doing that, his people are getting whacked as well, and he wants to find a way to do this. So this DJ Larrey, I'm gonna go with Larrey. Larrey, was one of the surgeons of Napoleon's who developed this system for a fast assessment and the most expeditious treatment for the most severe cases.
Yeah, okay, for the most survivability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So right away, this application of the word in the battlefield in Napoleon time, we're talking, what, early 1800s, you know, late 1700s. It was a system.
Well used, yeah.
It was in use. This guy even had an you know, a four-wheeled ambulance priority system as well. So if you were, and let me tell you, they had, sadly, really, when you read into it, you realize it was only for officers, too. If you were a foot soldier,
yeah, you were.
You just were bleeding and dying.
You gave your life for the cause.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
you literally meant his men when you said his men.
I did, yeah. So it's ruthless when you look at it like that.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, I mean, you got to look at it how it was.
But he had, it was just two system, a dual system. It's petit bleu, which is minor injury, for lack of a better definition.
All right.
The word looks like blesses, but I looked it up. It's kind of, it's bleu is the best I could give you.
All right.
And then grand, I don't know if they'd roll that R like that, but it's grand blessé or bleu. So you had your big wounds and small wounds, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the sorting wards were called salle de triage, although, you know, the French don't really say that T. I can't do it. Salle de triage, something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Pardon me, French people, or anyone that has to listen to my butchery. So
really it does carry that triage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, we're way before World War I, we're way before the coffee beans.
Yeah.
Now the word itself, I mean, France and England, you know, it's like Pennsylvania and Ohio,
like
right?
The channel, that's it.
Yeah, you're right there.
Yeah.
So the word is old and goes back to 12th century. And the verb of it, so it's sorter, basically, you're a sorter.
Mm-hmm.
So the verb of it is traire. So if so is it Lars the sorter?
The sorter.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Right?
Yeah.
Like we got those words like that, right?
Yeah, right.
So yeah, the French word didn't change much at all over hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah.
So even very old French, where we were, you know, 1200s, to choose, to select, to find, to pull. That's that traire word. Then it became sort of became a verb in that form.
Verbicized.
Traire.
Yeah.
To grade, the grader, calibrate, sort. And then triage became, you know, the process.
The act of.
Of doing that. And all of the other stuff is relative static, as far as I'm concerned. It got picked up. Sure, in World War I, it got picked up by the Brits. The Brits picked it up earlier, clearly, as a sorting word, and that's where that lumber thing comes through in the 1700s.
Yeah.
But it was a French word well before that.
Right. You said back to 1200, and we're getting trier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's your money melon.
Nice.
I know.
Good money melon. I had, in my mind, for some reason, French was ringing out, but I didn't have anything behind it. So I'm glad now I have it behind there.
Oh, the French will ring out on you.
Yeah, they will.
You know what else rings out on you?
What's that?
The adverts.
Oh.
We have a new one, too. Check it out.
Nice.
Allswell believes in the power of a good night's sleep for all. Their products feature innovative technology and unbelievable comfort and support without deflating your wallet. Combining the best of both worlds, the Allswell features hybrid mattress technology with memory foam and individually wrapped coils. For a winning blend of comfort and support, follow the link in the show notes for financing as low as 0%, a 100-night risk-free trial, free free shipping and returns, and a 10-year limited warranty designed to make good sleep accessible to all. Real luxury, unreal prices. AllswellHome.com. Whole Nine Yards is sponsored by the Roberto Clemente Museum. Located in a restored engine house in Pittsburgh's revitalized Lawrenceville neighborhood, the Clemente Museum is a showcase of the largest exhibited collection of baseball artifacts, works of art, literature, photographs, and memorabilia related to Roberto Clemente and his life in baseball. Shop the store for clothing and other items featuring the iconic 21 logo, and purchase tour tickets for the museum at ClementeMuseum.com. Enter promo code W9Y21 for a 10% discount on hats and tees. That's ClementeMuseum.com, promo code W9Y21. Whole Nine Yards is sponsored by Big Science Music. Big Science Music is a Cannes and One Show award-winning original music and sound boutique, providing scoring, sound design, radio, podcast, and audio post-production services for the advertising, film, and video industries. Big Science Music also offers ADR, casting, and project management. Big Science Music's reels, full capabilities, and more can be found at BigScienceMusic.com. That's BigScienceMusic.com.
All right, so part B, or two.
Whichever one.
Due.
Of things that are not going well.
Due croissant. So, you're going to start us off again.
Yes. With, I don't believe this will be a debacle.
Gee, I hope not. Oh, debacle's your word.
Debacle.
Yeah.
Things are not going well. They're a debacle.
Yeah, that's a word that means yes.
We use it to mean disaster, or things aren't going well, sure.
Yeah.
But the definition is a sudden violent collapse, flooding caused by a tumultuous breakup of ice in a river during the spring or summer, a breaking or bursting forth, a violent rush or flood of water which breaks down opposing barriers and hurls forward and disperses blocks of stone and other debris.
Wow.
Yeah. It seems debacle, we're solely in, at least so far, is a French word. So we're sticking with our French origins. Debacle.
You got a lot of French today.
Yeah. To unbar, break loose, to unbolt. And they also figuratively used it to mean disaster as well.
Well, it's about time.
This one just goes back, debacle, to free, to unbar. The de, they're using to mean off. And bacle is bar from Latin, it sounds like. It looks like. Latin baculum.
Jeez.
Yeah. So this literal sense as a usage of an 1802 geology book that explains landscapes left by the ice ages, essentially. Almost kind of like glaciers moving through, things like that. Breaking up of ice, stuff like that. So the figurative sense of disaster was kind of present, and we sort of used it as both, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was tucked in there.
Right. The disaster was already present in the French idea of this by the time we use it in geology, which is its literal use in 1802. Yeah, the English are using it in the 1800s in a geological sense, which is the literal definition of its usage to mean the breakup of ice. But the figurative sense of disaster was already present to the word in French before we used it in its literal sense in English.
All right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we knew it meant disaster as well, but we used it for the literal breaking up of ice.
Right.
Bursting through barriers to unbar.
I gotcha.
Yeah. And then by the 1830s, it seems like we use it for both. New York Evening Post. In an instant, a sudden panic seized the troops. A cry was heard, and they were cut off. A complete debacle followed, the whole army quitting the field in the greatest confusion. That's 1830s. So we're using it in geology textbooks to mean what it is, and we're using it in popular print to mean our figurative sense of disaster.
Yeah, because it's a nice word, and it's just laying there, so why not use it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that happens a lot with the words like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it is a silent, violent collapse.
Yeah.
That sounds like a disaster.
So you're like, well, why not?
It's a verbification, and it's not that, but yes. Why not use this word for that?
Yeah, make it fun.
Exactly.
Put a little color in our explanations.
Add some, yeah, right, like we said. But yeah, that one's pretty straightforward.
Wait, you're done?
That's, I mean, it. We got a definition, we're in. We've got a language, we're in by 1830.
What?
I'm sorry.
That was expedient.
Yeah, that one.
There's no, and what did I say the last time? No mystery, just history.
Just history. Yeah, but I mean, there's more.
That was mustache.
Yeah, debacle. I wasn't expecting the tumultuous breakup of ice.
No. All right.
Yeah. Things are not going well.
Well, I mean, you know, some words are simple. I have blooper.
Bloop. Oh, nice. Okay.
And you know what, blooper?
Yeah.
Wow.
Huh.
It is, compared to a lot of words that we explore,
yeah,
it is really relatively new. Not new like couch potato, but I mean, yeah. It's just not that old. I mean, listen to it. It sounds like it has no class, that word, blooper.
Ugh. So, ugh, trashy.
Yeah, it is.
All right.
But, you know, we typically think of a blooper as, you know, somebody didn't get their line right on a TV show or something.
Missed a take.
Right?
Or laughed or whatever.
Yeah.
A fun little aside. Or not fun.
And then we enjoy seeing that. That's exactly how we think of it.
Yeah.
But
blooper reel.
You know, it did come from somewhere. It didn't just come from nowhere.
I never thought of this one. I have no preconceived ideas.
So there are plenty of people who, on a shallow dig, want us to believe that Burt Reynolds and Hal Needham, director for
sure.
Burt Reynolds, coined and created this idea.
Okay.
Also popularized by Jackie Chan.
And was it first used in Cannonball Run?
No. First used, and we're talking, we're not talking first used, but we're talking the technique of putting the outtakes after the credits, you know, or down there, right?
Yeah.
And mostly, I guess, because I think Hal Needham used to be a stuntman, then he turned director. So
you want someone who knows the work to direct the stunts, I know that.
Well, sure. But he also like to show the stuff behind the stunts and his stunt friends, you know, and all of the funnies and also the work of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but whatever. First put into the end of a film called Hooper.
It's not Cannonball Run that I'm thinking of. It's Smokey and the Bandit. But yeah, okay. Hooper?
Well, it doesn't matter because the audience loved this.
Nice.
And so he went on to put them on Smokey and the Bandit 2.
Okay.
The Cannonball Run, Stroker Ace.
All right.
And Cannonball Run 1. I guess I should have said those out of order. But you know, time doesn't exist.
No, so it all just happened.
All those movies, he did that.
The Cannonball Run.
But okay. Hooper was the first. That's the only thing you really need to know.
Yeah, yeah. All right. I did not know that. I didn't even know that he was the pioneer.
It's wild. Well,
okay.
Well, I mean,
presupposing,
you know, pioneer. So, in the 50s, there was a show. Now, they said there were some record albums, but there were also TV broadcasts, and you could find them on YouTube. I watched them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fellow Kermit Schaefer who had a show called Pardon My Blooper.
Okay.
Yeah. The problem that I had watching the show is, you know, from a guy who likes to watch prank videos on YouTube and stuff like that, you know, you could pick out the fake ones, the ones that they stage, you know.
Sure.
You know the girlfriend knows the saran wraps in the doorway. You really have to get her. don't put me up a fake one. So this is the same thing, although you kind of forgive them because there are these old 50s and 60s. So something would happen, out at a sporting event, like an announcer would say something funny.
Mm-hmm.
But in those days, everything wasn't being recorded all the time like mm-hmm. it is now. So they'd right. know it happened. Somebody would document it, that was funny. Then they'd recreate it, you know? Mm-hmm. And you could tell a lot of them are recreations, not all of them.
Gotcha.
But there are plenty of them that are, and you're like, yeah, maybe in the 50s that was funny, but you haven't seen, you know, Best Fails at Work 2019.
Have you seen?
It was the Russians and the cranes. They just can't really seem to navigate those. But it gives me joy as long as no one's seriously hurt.
Yeah.
Of course. So, ha!
Best Work Fails 2019.
Yeah. I am not like you, maybe, I think, someone who takes in more like large scale animated films.
Right, sure.
But
I do that, yes.
I've been told through my research that, you know, I guess they spend the time to like the audio bloopers of the cast reading are then animated somehow.
Sometimes, yeah.
Maybe at the end of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
In such movies as A Bug's Life, Toy Story 2, Monsters, Inc., etc., etc.
Yes.
So that's, I guess the blooper was real.
Right. But the animation.
The animation. Like, they wouldn't have anyway. But it gives people joy, so whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. But let me tell you something.
Yeah, why the word bloop?
I'm almost there.
All right, sweet.
Ha. And funny you should say that.
All right.
Because it is from the word bloop.
Okay.
Indeed.
So what the, right.
Now they use a funny word for me. I understand just enough electronics to be dangerous, but I know I don't like this word use here.
Okay.
In all of the definitions. It was used to define what they call feedback, in the 1920s to refer to a terrible, annoying feedback noise that affected nearby radios when users tuned their sets incorrectly.
Yeah.
Now, that's not exactly what's happening. If you have two radios next to each other, for one thing, and we won't get into all of this, but the super heterodyne principle of two oscillators next to each other create the sum, the difference, and the two original oscillator frequencies. So if you put a radio that has super heterodyne, an old tuning radio, next to another one, you could call up all kind of havoc really fast.
Yeah.
But that effect, they call it a bloop. And then we tend to forget, even though, hey, you know, and again, it's fine, and I don't want it to die. I know that people modern day think it's slow, but there's a time for slow and lemonade and back porches. So baseball, when there was a fly ball that was sort of like a lunker that didn't make it all the way to the outfielder, but went past the infielder.
Yeah.
They called that a looper and a blunder and it ended up being a blooper. Now, was it a mistake? It was it was probably a good, nicely hit ball to get
a
base hit or something, yeah. I guess. I don't know. That's a baseball thing, right?
That's a blooper?
Yeah. So,
okay. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And it becomes that in American baseball in the 30s and 40s. So our friend Kermit Schaefer, you know, he had some terms, and one of them he called, you know, a boner, a bone, boneheaded mistake,
yeah.
Breakdown, and then took blooper from baseball, and made the show Pardon My Blooper. So then, obviously, the rest is history with Cannonball Run, etc. And that's where blooper comes from.
Huh.
Yeah, it's relatively new, like I said, compared to so many of our words.
Yeah.
Almost so new that it's not, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's just hard to find a detailed.
Well,
or like a, yeah.
I mean, Couch Potato was super new and it had exacting detail from down to the day, you know?
That's true.
So yeah, I don't know. It's pretty exact. It went from the radio, and I don't know why you'd call it that, the heterodyning sound, to baseball.
Like a bloop.
And from baseball, you know, it's kind of, it probably feels awkward. And you got the infielder and the outfielder running for the ball. It probably made for some, at least...
jocularity.
Yeah, some comic errors.
Yeah, and you hear announcers saying words. You're going to add those words into your things.
Yeah. Wow. So, that's what we got for...
Things aren't going well.
Ta-da. Yeah, and we never got around to, hey, Whole Nine Yards Pod.
If you'd like to express that things are going well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whole Nine Yards Pod Reddit, Twitter.
Yeah.
Instagram.
Yes.
Whole Nine Yards Podcast, Facebook.
Yeah.
In all of these instances, the 9 is a number.
That's right.
And we'd love to hear from you. Seriously, please hit us up. I'm Jay.
And I'm Ray.
And we're not idioms.
Whole Nine Yards is written, recorded, and produced by Big Science Pods. Learn more at wholenineyards.org or contact Whole Nine Yards by emailing heyyou@wholenineyards.org. That's heyyou@wholenumber9yards.org. Whole Nine Yards theme music composed by Big Science Music.